Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we're going to be talking with two great attorneys, two senior counsel attorneys from Beryl Daner, Benjamin Ford and Elizabeth Smith, and we're going to be talking about wearable technology. You know, wearable technology has become all the rage here. You know, we have iPhone connected to your iWatch, connected to your Garmin, connected to your iPad, connected to your, I don't know, connecting to everything. So this is a really relevant topic as wearables become more and more important in everyday life and they are entering the workplace. I know HR professionals have said to me, you know, this causes a challenge sometimes. There's personal information on these technologies. There's information that can be seen by others that can flash up on a screen. It can be create harassment issues. It can create all sorts of issues in the workplace. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. So let me welcome Ben and Elizabeth.
I actually go by Beth.
Beth, to our show today. Welcome and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
No, that's great. So, wearable technology, it's a relatively more newer area, right? I mean, we've always had a watch.
Would you
call that a wearable technology?
Yeah, you certainly would. But I think in the context that where we're talking about this in legal development, I think what we're seeing is the technology is really outstripping and outpacing the developments in the law. And that's where lawyers jump in, and that's where HR professionals jump in, and people are standing around scratching their heads thinking, how do we get a handle on this? Because while a wristwatch is certainly a piece of wearable technology, a wristwatch that can take a picture, a wristwatch that can measure your heart rate and measure the amount of steps that you take every day suddenly presents some pretty tough HR challenges.
And there's really two sides to it, too. I mean, I think on one side, how can you as an employer maximize your business and your productivity by using the air quotes good forces of wearable technology? And then on the other side, how can you as an employer create policies that help you make sure that your workforce is not misusing or causing problems by using wearable technology in the workplace?
So let's start at the beginning a little bit here. We all kind of know what it is. Let's start with that premise. So somebody brings something to work. They're wearing one of their new Fitbits, one of their new iWatches, whatever it may be that they're bringing to the workplace. So I, as the employer, have to make a decision in terms of what I need to start. That's where we start, right? As an employer, we go, I need to make a decision. Does this, A, affect my workplace?
Right.
Right? I mean, we start with the basic premise.
Yeah.
So how do I make that determination? How do I determine, hey, is this a potential benefit, threat, risk, you know, all those things? How do I determine that? Let's start at the beginning. Before we talk about what we're going to do about it, how do I assess that?
I think it's similar to what we've been doing as far as smartphones in the workplace environment for a number of years. That really, I think, Ben would agree with me, was the beginning of employers having to be nimble and figure out, is this a distraction or is it an enhancement? Do I need a policy? Is there misuse going on?
Oh, come on, Ben. I want to know if you actually agree with her. Come on. Let's fun here.
I agree with everything that Beth says always. I just might be a little more nuanced. I think you're right. That really is the first question is this a distraction? And also, does this present a security problem? And when we talk about security problems, you know, we're looking at things that record video and not necessarily things that record audio. I mean, everyone's phone now records both video and audio. But, you know, we have to be conscious of those things when we're looking at this. But you got to remember, we're only talking about sort of half of the problem here. Half of the problem is employers sort of using this technology and being defensive about it. The other half of the problem is employers using this technology to their advantage. So when we're talking about using or being aware of the risks associated with it, it's definitely looking at the technology and trying to figure out what it will do. We see Fitbits all the time, and Fitbits are great things. I don't think I think most people would say that a Fitbit is not necessarily a distraction. But, you know, somebody playing Pokemon Go in the office on their phone would certainly be a distraction.
I've never played that game, but I hear it's fun.
It's supposed to be.
It's supposed to be a good time.
I would encourage those who, if anybody reads HR law blogs, we have an interesting blog entry on Pokemon Go. We actually found, I don't know, what are they called, a Pokemon or one of the characters right in our office. And so we had a big thing about that.
Wow, that's impressive.
But again, it's an example of a little bit of piece of technology that creates quite a bit of disruption.
And no, it can create not only disruption but lack of productivity. Right, it changes the dynamic sometimes. I'm not saying that it's not okay for people to have fun at work. As a matter of fact, if you're not having a good time at work, you probably shouldn't be at work. You probably should do something else with your life. But there's a difference between fun and productivity and risk, correct?
Right, that's correct.
And you don't always know how your coworker feels about the fun you think you're having. So that's something to keep in mind as
well.
Wow,
that's another topic.
That's why I always agree with Beth.
In terms of that. Okay, so the employer has to make that determination. Are there some factors that you would look at that say, hey, you know, these things in my workplace are key factors that I should think about and key areas that I need to go over? What are some of those?
Well, what's interesting is I think sometimes people who are not tech savvy think this is a whole new world. But quite honestly, it's the same factors you use in every analysis. So as Ben mentioned, do we have proprietary information that could be at risk if somebody were to misuse the technology? Is there a business necessity that this technology could be applied to? Are there privacy rights that we need to be concerned about? And finally, do our employees have certain rights, perhaps governed by the National Labor Relations Act, that we need to be mindful of when we're forming policies?
Yeah, and I think just to add to that, or maybe even just taking a zooming out a little bit, the question in my mind that I always go to is, what kind of data is being collected? And who has control over this data, and how is it going to be stored? Those are really the first two questions that I look at.
Isn't this exactly, in some ways, the same questions we'd ask for someone having their computer at work?
Exactly.
And using it for their personal information, you know, going on their personal Facebook page or collecting data for, you know, to use potentially at home in terms of working at home or a virtual station or different things like that. Isn't there some similarity between the two?
Yeah, it's easy. It's easy to sort of draw analogies between existing technology and developing technology. But I would say that what we are presented with now is much more dynamic and much more personalized information. Employers are adopting and using technologies now that have multiple purposes, not just for what they're being used for. Say, for example, some of the really high-tech security applications will use retinal scanners now. And a retinal scanner can both identify a person and actually can be used or reprogrammed to collect data on the health of the retina and also, in some cases, be used to diagnose some diseases. And so what we're having now is we're seeing, as the technology is developing, we're seeing and identifying risk and opportunity in much more dynamic ways than we have in the past.
We're talking with Ben and Beth from Verrill Dana, both counsel attorneys for employment law, and we're talking about wearable technology. You know, one of the things that employers have to deal with, as we've talked about, is the fact that now that we've determined it may or may not be something that we have to be concerned about, let's say for sake of argument, it is something we have to be concerned about writing policy. Now, policies are wonderful. They're great. Heck, we write them. That's what we do. This is an important part. But they do have nuances to them. And they have to be tailored to the organization itself that fits the culture. You know, there are policies that are very strict, policies that are very loose, policies down the middle. How do you determine in this area things like, do we restrict it? And what does that mean? Do we allow it, but only in certain situations? How do we do that and then monitor its on and off capability? You know, talk a little bit about the policy end of it.
I think that takes a lot of thoughtful deliberation, quite honestly, because you're right. Sometimes I like policies that are incredibly explicit because that speaks to the 1% the difficult employee that you're going to have to manage.
Difficult employee?
Yeah, never
There's such a thing as a difficult employee?
Every once in a while.
All right, maybe.
But other times, I like looser policies because it allows you the freedom to address in some manner a case-by-case analysis. With this technology, I think you need some basic policies that are pretty clear that define what the expectations are to protect the interests of the business and yet leave room to protect the interests of your individual employees, giving them the respect that every employer gives to the employees. Do you agree, Ben?
I do. Of course, Beth. Of course I agree. But also, I will add, this is a great – writing policies, especially writing policies around developments in technology, is one of the cool things that we get to do as lawyers, because we get to take our knowledge of the individual statutes and laws and decisions in the various states that our clients work in, and then you bring those to the table, and our clients bring their business needs. And we hash out what's going to work, what policy is going to work that will both fit their business needs, fit the culture of the company, but also be compliant with the law. And that's going to go state by state.
Well, I was just going to mention that there are more and more states looking at this and coming up with rules and regulations around privacy and different things like that. But as you mentioned earlier, it's a little behind, right? They're always behind that next technology. How do you, weave that in so it stays current and relevant?
Well, we know that really when you boil all this technology down, it really is a matter of collecting data. And so if you focus on the data and you focus on where the data is being collected, who's maintaining it and how it's going to be used, I think that's where I would focus on when it comes time to writing these types of policies.
And what I typically do, Dave, is I ask the employer, what's your goal? What do you want? Because that, to me, is the starting point. What's the end point that you want to reach? And then Ben and I would look at the various laws that might be implicated, look at the various possible situations, both based on experience. We've certainly both had situations where we've had a client call with a, oh my goodness, what do I do? This is happening right now. And then together with the client, you kind of collaboratively work to create a policy that may not meet every wish list, but comes as close as you can. You agree, Ben?
I do. Of course.
Boy, this is a love fest between this. You know, it's always
Beth
good
and
to
I
know.
Always agree.
You know, I think this may be a first on the HR. Two attorneys that agree on something. It may be a first, but that's okay. We'll take that.
Well, we could get some other people in here that I'm sure would disagree with.
Yeah,
us,
no, no worries. I'm sure that's how that works. You know, the other thing that, and you mentioned it a little bit, is the personal side of that information, that personal data. So, blunt question. What do employers have the right to or right not to have or monitor in regards to personal information?
Well, I think when we talk about rights, I look at it from a standpoint of risk. And when we're looking at employers collecting, storing, and using data, I look at the risks associated with that. And there really are – the major risks are this information can make you aware that somebody might have a disability. This information it can also fall under HIPAA. Regulations and if used and misused and abused can actually generate both civil and criminal liability, and so that's really what I'm focusing on is more of the risks associated with the information. I'm a litigator, and I like as many witnesses as possible. In fact, I like all my witnesses to have pure hearts and empty heads. And I don't want them to know about someone's disability if we can possibly help it. And that the risk that this technology generates is that it can now be implied that the employer knew about some disability somewhere down the road, which could then lead to a discrimination claim.
But, you know, a lot of employers already are using the technology. They just might not realize the extent to which they have this technology. Things like this call may be recorded for customer service reasons, or video cameras that are in the warehouse area, and wherever that data is going and being stored. I mean, that's why it's really critical that employers understand that the day is here. In fact, the day is yesterday that you should be creating these policies and be aware. It feels like it's all new. Things like the smart sleeves, the wearable clothing, and certainly there are a bunch of startups creating things. I was talking to Ben earlier today. There's a company out of Boston that has created a ID badge on a lanyard that has sensors to listen to voice, has sensors tracking where you're going. Of course, they take the bathroom out of it. Thank goodness. You can't track there.
What do they put? Is there a little barrier that they walk through?
I don't know if it's like lead lined or something. Yeah, I'm not sure what it is. Okay. But I mean, that speaks to the question you just asked, Dave, which is, what are we doing? You know, what as an employer should you and could you be doing with that kind of a data tracker? And how far are we from the day when everybody is issued that lanyard?
Well, we're going to go to break right now and think about the fact that at least the bathroom is still sacred and HR does not have to listen. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on Newstalk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
When things come out of left field, having a game plan makes all the difference. Luckily, Farmers Insurance has been helping people cover their bases for 88 years, and they can help you too. Talk with an agent today so you can see if your coverage is ready for whatever curveballs may come your way. At Farmers, we know a thing or two because, well, we've seen a thing or two. Put our experience into play at Farmers.com. Farmers.com.
We are Farmers. Bum, ba-dum, bum, 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 bum.
Farmers.com.
Bum, ba-dum, bum, 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 bum.
Does your basement or crawl space have damp, musty odors? Do you worry about indoor gases and pollutants? Everyday living generates moisture that can nourish mold and odors, even asthmatic triggers. Indoor pollutants linked to respiratory ailments, birth defects, and cancers can become trapped in your home. You can't buy health, but you can buy Wave's moisture control and air quality products. Wave Home Solutions, for a dry, healthy home. Satisfaction guaranteed. Go to dryhome123.com. That's dryhome123.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by cmacareer.com and maine.dalecarnegie.com. Today we're having a great conversation about wearable technology with Verrill Dana's own employment counsel, Benjamin Ford. We'll call you Ben today.
Yeah, that's fine.
And Elizabeth Smith, we'll call you Beth. Is that okay with both of you?
Perfect.
Good. Look at that. It's all good. We're having some fun today here in the studio. Yes, we are. We'll be talking about wearable technology and some of the challenges in regards to setting policy, setting employment, thought processes behind should you have a policy, shouldn't you. We've established for this sake that you probably should. You probably should have something in regards to, depending on your organization and what you feel is relevant to you. One of the things that has become very, very important is wellness. And from that standpoint, wellness has taken on a new meaning when it comes to wearables, because whether you're talking about Fitbits or even the Apple Watch or any of these other things, and by the way, we know the phone has also taken on that technology, but the reality is these have become even more personal information. So when an employer, for example, and I'm going to use this as one example, provides you technology, provides you an Apple Watch for your employment, provides you the smartphone that goes along with it, and will now, that data will be collected on that wearable technology. What are the risks? What are the liabilities? What are the benefits, right? Especially if, in fact, they have a wellness policy, which, in fact, may track some of this information.
Yeah. I know Ben's going to say, make sure you have a third party administering the data, because the arm's length will help in protect an employer.
Well, so I'm going to ask on that, because, yes, a third party can administer it, get it, but that watch, that phone collects it on the device itself. Yes. That's not third party.
Well, yeah, that's true. It collects it on the device itself, but the question is how is that accessed? And, you know, can you, is it possible to plug in a Fitbit to collect that information? You know, most of the employers that we work with wouldn't have the technology to do that. And yes, you're right, Beth. I am going to tell you that if you can use a third-party administrator for that, you're going to want to, because you're not going to want to have the raw data anywhere near your company, just because there's just too much information there.
So let me push back one more time just to make sure we're clear. So I provided you this phone, and at the end of your employment, I get it back. That data's in the phone.
The phone's a little bit different than a Fitbit because, as you know, the Fitbit has to sync somewhere. You're right. Your phone, to me, is a bit more problematic.
Or the iPhone, if I gave that as a device in terms of that.
One of the obvious problems is that you're not asking people to volunteer to participate. You're telling them. And that brings up a whole host of problems, from I trip and fall while I'm tracking my data, that's a work-related injury potentially, to you discover, as Ben has said, that in fact you are at the pre-diabetes stage because of some information that's being tracked. And as employer, do we want that information? Do we want to have access to that? I don't think so, but
I think, Dave, you bring up a very interesting problem, interesting hypothetical, which is, let's say an employer gives an employee an iWatch and says, you know, use this for company purposes. The employee downloads an app that tracks their health, whatever, blood pressure. The iWatch then – that employee then leaves the company, gives the iWatch back to the employer. The employer does not delete the data and gives the iWatch to the next employee, who can then access it. Fascinating, interesting hypothetical. I haven't seen that yet, but
– Well, I can see that in terms of right now today, companies provide phones for their employees. And as you know, the iPhone has a health meter and it's always on. Yeah. I mean, all that data is in that phone. So when I get the phone back, if I'm the employer and I have that, that data is in there. And I'm now going to give it to the next employee. Now, I suppose now that we're talking about it, hadn't thought about it, should be cleared, right? Should go in and do that go to Apple and have them reboot the thing and delete everything out of it and reset everything. Yeah. But I doubt employers think about that.
Well, hopefully if they're listening to this,
they will
this program, they will now, because I think that's exactly right. I don't know. I would have to go back and dig into the law to find out whether there would be a type of a HIPAA violation for doing something like that, or for neglecting to delete the data. But it's certainly something that that would be a good practice, and it's something that people would want to pay attention to.
There are also GINA implications, quite honestly. You know,
and
the
GINA is
Genetic Information Act. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So GINA says that that employers can't discriminate against employees on the basis that they might be genetically predisposed to something. So that means that we don't want to have our clients have information about family histories of medical illnesses like high blood pressure or heart disease and things like that, because that has GINA implications. And so, just as Beth said, when this information is sitting on the phone, suddenly the employer may now have access to incriminating information that could use to support a GINA claim. Now, it's important to note here that it doesn't really matter whether or not the employer actually accesses the data. What matters is whether the employer can access the data. Courts in a lot of jurisdictions are moving towards this idea that we're going to imply that if the employer had the information, that the employer used the information. And we're going to make that implication just to make sure that a case can actually get to trial. And that's a movement that we're seeing in a lot of court cases, and that's why we get a little bit skittish when it comes time for employers to sort of keep this information
around. But the more basic question is, who owns the data? And that's really where I think the employer and the HR professional has to start.
That's where the policies come in.
No, there's no question. And I do think about that from a standpoint of not only each state or from a federal standpoint, but there are international guidelines for people that travel and work overseas. There are restrictions in Europe and others having to do with personal death. They're a little different than the United States. And so there are aspects to this that if you have an office in France or you have an office in some other location, there are other things to think about.
Or what about if you've issued your employee this phone and they take a vacation trip to Australia, where I know there's a specific law that talks about data and data privacy. Were they working if you send them an email on that phone? And does that then make whatever data that's being generated there problematic? I mean, I think there are so many implications here.
Ben looks like his head's going to implode.
My head is going to explode. I think, okay, all right, let me just put up a flag here and say, okay, we lawyers tend to be a little bit doom and gloom, and it's our job to identify risk. It's what we do. But I will say we still have businesses to run, and there are these devices can be extremely useful. There's a technology now called a smart cap, which is something that a truck driver wears, and if it looks like the truck driver is nodding off, the thing will, I don't know, pull an alarm or stop the truck, right? You know, do something.
Incredibly helpful.
Yeah.
Or weeding over a line and coming back.
Yeah.
It's incredibly helpful.
It actually can also be used to help plot the most efficient route if you're wearing it in a warehouse, so you're cutting down on wear and tear on your employees.
Yeah, exactly. So we tend to be a little bit spooky when it comes to this stuff, but it does have utility. Certainly.
Well, that's why we put attorneys on the show, you know. And what I do like about the fact is you are realistic, right? To the fact that there is balances to this.
First we scare you, then we make you.
That's
happy.
Exactly right. You know, that big black cloud, and then it parts, and the sun comes through, right?
We hold hands and sing kumbaya.
Well, let's not get crazy.
Our job is to say, Hey, client, you know, you can do what you want. Here are the risks associated with it, you know, and it's really, it's just a measure. It's a matter of balancing the risk and being aware of things that could possibly go wrong.
But if we have any takeaway at all, if you're listening and there's any takeaway, it's call before the problem arises, because it's a whole lot easier to fix it before it happens.
You know, one of the things that this brings up is the fact that the generational thought process that's out there, you know, most senior leaders, we won't say all, are either probably in the baby boomer category or maybe Gen X. Now, I'm not saying there aren't millennial CEOs. There most certainly are in senior levels, and they are coming up fast. As we know, 51% of the workforce right now is already millennial. So it's just taking over the workforce, as we know. The reality is, though, there are members of the baby boom generation or older that don't really get it. They don't understand the technology and, in fact, can be either intimidated by it or not understand the risks associated with it, right, in terms of what's going on. So how do you kind of, you know, merge that difference between generations when you have these conversations with clients?
Well, I think that any good leader is going to surround themselves with people who can fill in for their weaknesses. So that'd be my first suggestion, because I personally was being taught to program in BASIC in high school. If anybody even knows what BASIC is, yeah. So
does that involve granite and chisel?
No, it was kind of like BASIC and COBOL and Fortran. Yep. I remember all those.
It's one step above.
Not that old, ladies and gentlemen.
Is that like Pong?
It's kind of like an abacus.
Actually, I think it was before Pong, to be honest with you.
So I certainly recognize these gaps, and I, like anybody else that you're describing, go to my peers that I know are more facile. Ben, Tawny, I mean, I have peers who are far more facile at that stuff. That's my first step. It seems pretty easy.
I think the important the aspect about this wearable technology that I think about generationally is, are your older workers going to be just as comfortable using this technology as your younger workers are? And if you're having performance problems, is it because the person refuses to use the technology because they're not comfortable with it, because there's an age issue there, or is there something else going on? This is where really good leadership comes in. You know, we as lawyers can provide guidance on the law and good policy, but this really is where good leadership comes in. And it is really an HR professional's job and a management professional's job to make sure that they're adapting technology or adopting technology that can be used cross-generationally. And if you can't, if you're using technology that the older people are having trouble adapting to, you could end up with some age discrimination claims, and you could end up with some pretty serious liability there.
That were unforeseen, because obviously no one's going to put the technology in place to cull the herd, as it were. But part of it is, you know, creating consensus, and part of it is education.
You know, to that educational point, employers need to look at training in different ways. And is there, or should there be, in this case, training that looks at those differences when you're talking about wearable technology or even technology in general?
Yeah, actually there is. And it's interesting. My background before I became a lawyer was a trainer. And we know so much more about how different people learn differently now than we did a generation ago. And one of the ways that we can apply that knowledge is through using technology, using wearable technology, but just also using different types of computer programs to train people. And so we really have the ability to have these highly adaptive training programs that can utilize this technology.
And I was a school teacher, high school, before I went to law school. So the same thing goes when you're trying to teach somebody who's dyslexic French, you learn to use whatever you have. So I might take one more step beyond Ben's and say all training doesn't have to be technology-based, even if you're training on technology. And I think a good leader, a good HR person would have enough awareness of the population that they're teaching to know that some people learn by seeing, some people learn by hearing, and some people learn by doing. Invite your folks to self-identify if they're able to, and then make sure whatever training you're doing has at least those three elements of learning as a part of the training.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
Hi, this is Chip Wade, DIY expert, TV host, and lead designer for Wade Works Creative. Looking for a quick update? Start now with the Home Depot's Winter Rethink Kitchen and Bath event. You can save on a variety of stylish contemporary faucets from top brand names like Moen, Pfister, and Kohler. They've got affordable, stylish bath vanities too. Just place your order online through the Home Depot iPod and Android apps. Then come pick up your items ready and paid. Visit homedepot.com/bath for details. The Home Depot. More saving, more doing.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. A lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
And we're back. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by cmacareer.com and maine.dalecarnegie.com. Today we're talking about wearable technology and what that means to you as an employer. The risks, the rewards. We're talking with Verrill Dana's own Ben Ford and Beth Smith. Welcome again to the show. We appreciate having you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
You're very welcome. You know, Alvaro Dana is a great sponsor of the show. They, of course, sponsor the HR Tip of the Week. We appreciate you here. It's great.
Well,
it's
we appreciate the ability to reach out to people and talk about these issues.
And that's what it really is about, right? Educating HR professionals. This is an HR education show. That's what we do. We try to, you know, come out with different ideas, try to have a little fun with it. HR doesn't have to be boring.
And lawyers don't have to be
boring
either.
Lawyers don't have to be boring.
That's right. We can have fun.
You can be the judge of that after this show. All right. Now, just saying. You can be the judge. That's it.
Will I be getting emails?
Probably. All right. So we're going to be going on with the show. So, again, we've talked about wearable technology, but there are some tips, I think, at this point that employers should think about. And Ben, you had started to mention them a little bit during the break, but I said, hey, we should really put these on the air. So why don't you give some of the tips that employers need to think about when it comes to wearable technology risk?
Sure. Well, we already talked about if you can use a third-party contractor to implement wearable technology, you know, efficiency type of programs, then you should. But if you do use a third party contractor, make sure that you have make sure you have a lawyer look over some of those agreements. I would want to see some sort of an indemnity language between the contractor and the employer, saying that if there's a problem, the contractor agrees to indemnify the employer. But if you don't want to use a contractor, then and you want to do this in-house, you have to really make sure that you strictly control access to the data. Any data that's collected and stored, you have to have policies in place and password protections and things like that to keep people from digging in places where they shouldn't be.
So how important having to do with that is the IT security part of this, right?
It's huge.
I mean, how do you protect that IT is protected from not seeing things that they shouldn't see?
Wow. Yeah, I guess you can create systems where data is collected, but the person who's the host for collecting it doesn't necessarily see the data. It's a repository. What do you think, Ben?
Well, we're getting outside of my area of expertise here, but I can tell you that it seems like every year I've got to enter another password or another random number from some random number generating machine somewhere. And I think every time I get frustrated about that, and then I think, well, wait a second, what would happen if the information that is on my laptop or on my phone got into the wrong hands? For my clients, it would be awful. And so, you know, information and security is something that that I take really seriously. And I think companies out there are starting to sort of wake up and seeing that all of these hacking scandals that are happening are really matter and are something that people need to be concerned about.
So when, from an employer standpoint, and this question is live, I would say, that this is one employer has asked us questions about should employees or should IT people in specific, but let's say employees in general, sign confidentiality agreements for information they may or may not see during the course and time of being employed?
If you're going to use a confidentiality agreement, that's probably someone you'd want to use it with, but you want to make sure you speak with your attorney and it's tailored to the requirements of your location, your state. It's not overly broad, because Ben's probably seen this too. There's been a spate of recent cases speaking to what can and cannot be included in a confidentiality agreement.
Would personal data or personal information, because we're talking specific about wearables here, and the collection of that data in an IT framework, whatever that may be, right?
Yes.
And it is possible that an IT professional coming in could see that data either due to fixing, helping, some other way. Are they held to a different standard?
No, I think, well, they would be held to the same standard that you would, that you could apply in a confidentiality type of agreement.
Or non-disclosure.
Non-disclosure, something like that. But the interesting thing about the IT folks is, you know, agreements and contracts are only as good as their remedies, right? And so when you have somebody in the IT department who may or may not have, you know, any personal assets at all, decide that, hey, you know, they're going to create some revenge and they're going to wreak some havoc, and, you know, my confidentiality agreement be damned. I'm just going to go ahead and do this. So confidentiality agreements are not
But there is a liability risk to doing that, right? If you take personal information, put it out there on somebody.
Oh, yeah. There's definitely both a civil and likely criminal liability issue for that particular person. But what I don't want to see happen is I don't want to see people over relying too much on these non-disclosure and these confidentiality agreements. There is an element of sort of common sense here, and we want to make sure that
common sense is uncommon. Okay, can we just be clear about that?
Yeah, right. So you now have a lawyer on your show lecturing about common sense. Where is this world?
Where are we going here in this world? No, but I mean, to the point being is that, look, you risk and business, by inherent nature, it is a balance, right? You can't – if you overprotect yourself, you're going to close, you know, right? Because you can't do anything. You just kind of sit there.
Yeah. And quite honestly, just coming back to the beginning point, which is – wearable technology is new. It's exciting because it's new. But really, the principles that apply to all sensitive data that's in the workplace apply to these things. You got to be mindful about whistleblower claims, self-help remedies. I mean, there are ways that an IT professional might legitimately be accessing data that they've promised not to access. So there's always that aspect. But I hope that our audience isn't getting too cheesed up or thinking that this is a super unique challenge. It is in some senses, but it's also just like everything else we're managing every day in the workplace.
Yeah.
Well, you had said there were a couple more tips you wanted to provide.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, when it comes to wellness types of programs, an optional wellness program means an optional wellness program means it's optional, means that someone doesn't have to do it if they don't want to do it. And company cultures can get to the point where they're so rah-rah that optional suddenly becomes not optional. And so, again, this comes down to it's not a legal issue. It's a leadership issue. But it's a failure of leadership in not monitoring these types of programs can generate some legal liability there. If you're using it for efficiency tracking and things like that, I think all of your listeners know and are amazed, at least I am, at how incredibly creative people are at hacking into systems, bending the rules, finding workarounds, doing different things to sort of get around or get away with gaming the system. And so know that no technology is infallible. I've heard stories about putting step trackers on the dog.
I was dancing in the living room last night to hit that last 10,000 steps.
That's a great idea.
So there are your employees will always come up with ways around the system and know that no system is completely foolproof.
And another thing to keep in mind is as to speak to that point you raised earlier, which is that as each generation is moving up into management, we're getting folks who are going to be more savvy. And the chances of a merry prankster thinking something would be really funny increase. So as you're shaping policies, you need to keep that in mind, too.
What would you say is the number one thing? Number one thing an employer should be most happy about and worried about when it comes to wearable technology?
You gave me two questions, and you said I can only answer it with one thing. So I'm gonna answer it with two things.
Okay.
So first thing they should be
typical attorney.
Yeah, exactly. First thing they should be happy about are the opportunities for a healthier and more efficient workforce.
Yeah, I agree, Ben.
The second thing the one thing that they should be most worried about is the flow of data and how they're going to secure that and how they're going to restrict access and use that data in the future. Those are the two things.
Beth?
You know, he took the two good ones. I do think that system security is a huge issue for all employers. So that would be a worry. But I also agree that this technology could be used to create a more cohesive, maybe a happier, and certainly a much more productive workforce.
You know, I would agree with both. The fact there are pluses and minuses to both. And it is a new era, even though the technology itself is not that new from the standpoint of laptops and all that sort of stuff. I think what really this comes down to is access to people bringing more things that can create more distractions in the workplace, whether it causes from a harassment standpoint that it's now on a watch, they don't have to have their phones with them, or it beeps, it rings, it does all those things that can create distractions in the workplace. And that at times can be more annoying. Those little things can be more annoying than the big problems that are out there. And so how do you say to clients, you know, somebody's complaining about this thing dinging or this, you know, it's driving me crazy. I'm trying to get some work done and this beep, ding, ding, ooh, oh, ee. And Debbie, that's not a blooper. So, you know, in terms of that little, how, and the employee that has this, like, it's not a big deal. And the person in the other cubicle says, it's driving me crazy.
I know I keep coming back to this, but it's just like you deal with anything else. Is it an ADA issue? Maybe it's going bing, bong, bing, because the person needs that distraction to focus. And so it's the same problem solving, in my opinion, you do with any basic problem. You sit each one down. We look for a resolution. We look for the easiest solution. And maybe it means somebody moves with their cubicle. Maybe it means somebody wears a headset, so the bing, bing, bing only goes to them.
Yeah, and the way that I approach these questions is, the first question I ask is this a legal issue, really? And if it's not a legal issue, then is this a management issue and a business decision that we can make?
I think that's an excellent point, right? Not all issues are legal issues. Some things, common sense, that they can move things around and they can adjust within the workplace to make that happen. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we'll be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Guys, when you buy your clothes at DXL, you look good. But you feel like a rock star. So if you want to look and feel like a... You'll find all the brands you love, waist size 38 and up, all in one awesome store. DXL, you're looking good. Right now, Harbor Bay long sleeve tees are just $29.99 each when you buy two or more.
And we're back. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by cmacareer.com and main.dalecarnegie.com. Today we're talking with two of Verrill Dahmer's employment attorneys, Ben and Beth. We've had a great show today. Appreciate you being on the show. As we finalize in the last segment here, we have a few minutes left. We've talked about wearable technology being a plus. We've talked about being a minus, right? And so when an employer is really getting to the point of saying, okay, I'm going to write a policy, I'm going to think about doing this, why can't they just go online and Google one?
Oh, Ben, what are you going to say to that?
That's easy. the same reason why they can't go online and Google their business plan.
Or would you do surgery online? Would you take your teeth out from a guide online? Not always a best idea.
Well, you know, I think this goes to the fact that there are state differences too, right? And so talk about that. I know we talked at the beginning a little bit about, let's wrap it up talking about the state differences, the risks behind that.
Yeah, there are definitely state differences. The state differences, you know, being who can record secretly, you know, what types of consent do you need to record? There's also federal issues as well, you know, about adopting these types of policies. And there are some NLRB regulations out there that say that employees have a right to record certain proceedings as part of their Section 7 rights to discuss the terms and conditions of their employment. So that's going to vary state by state. It'll vary regulation by regulation. When new administrations come in, the regulations change. Not quickly, not right away, but they do. There'll also be developments in court cases that people have to pay attention to. Plus, every company is different. And so if you can find something online, chances are it's going to be for a company that is different than yours.
It might be okay as a starting point. But again, it goes to the question of what do you want in the end? It really should be policies tailored to your best business environment, your best business interests. So for that, you really can't just use a template.
Now, that doesn't mean that they have to go out and get a gold-plated policy. It does mean that they should pick up the phone and talk to whoever they use, whoever they consult with on legal issues. But there's no reason why they'd have to spend, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars analyzing every aspect of this. What they do need to do, though, is get some good advice and good counsel.
And what you want to also do is just be ahead of the curve so that when the problem arises, you at least have a starting point to address it.
And I think that's really what we're talking about today, right, is take some common sense time to think about your policies. And, you know, how often do you recommend policies get updated?
Well, it depends on the policy, but we should at least be looking at a lot of this stuff yearly.
Yeah, and if there's a change, we always communicate that to our clients and say, there's been a change. You might want to look at your policies and make sure they're up to speed.
You talked about a blog that your organization has. What's the website on that?
It's www.hrlawupdate.com.
And of course, you can always reach Ben or Beth at verildana.com. That's verildana.com. I want to thank both of you for being on the show today.
Thanks so much, Dave.
Great information about wearables, and enjoy your day.
Thank you very much, Dave.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by verildana.com.
Hi, this is Doug Currier from Verildana. Having represented employers for over 25 years, I have found many reasons to choose arbitration over litigating a case in court. I want to share with you my top three reasons. First, litigation is expensive, really expensive. With litigation, there is also a pressure to settle claims, even those that lack merit, in order to avoid the cost of litigation. Arbitration generally is considerably less expensive, and thus matters are more likely to be resolved on the merits. Second, battling it out in court takes a long time, a long time. Arbitration tends to be faster and less demanding of a process, thus reducing the distraction and burden on your company and your employees. Finally, arbitration is much more of a private process than litigating in court. Typically, neither party benefits from a public display of your dispute. You and your employees can enter into a written agreement now that all future disputes will be resolved by arbitration, something to think about. For further insights and advice, please reach out to Verrill & Dana's labor and employment law attorneys.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VerrillDana.com. Next week on the HR Power Hour, our guest is going to be Tom Wright. He's the founder and lead trainer of Turning65Workshop.com. Tom's going to be talking about, have you thought about what your retirement's going to look like at 65 or older? What does it mean? Did you know that decisions you could make will make all the difference in your financial security? That's on the next HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 a.m. or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.